Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Locked On Seminoles. Today, we are going to explain how an NCAA rule change could make the ACC's conference championship matter once again. Drake, roll the video. Let's get to the show for the people.
You are Locked On Seminoles, your daily podcast on the Florida State Seminoles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Thursday. That's right, Cinco de Mayo's edition of Locked On Seminoles. I'm your host, Max. That's your host, Drake. Almost said Dave, and then I didn't, and then I snitched on myself. So I might as well have done it.
I should mute you for that, honestly.
And today we're going to talk about the proposed rule change at the NCAA that says, and I quote, "They're going to discuss a recent change to allow conferences to determine conference title game teams. Big 12 is in for it with move to 14 teams, and Pac-12 has discussed schedule changes to get top two teams to play instead of a division split." That reporter leaves out the Big 10 has also discussed going to a divisionless model. I believe the SEC has to be thinking about it. I don't have that on good authority, but there's no way they aren't, because they're getting so big that you either have to not play people in your division, or you lose those cross rivalries, or you have to play like 10 conference games, which no one really wants to do. But Drake, let me summarize what that means for Florida State. If the ACC were to vote in favor of this and adopt this, it means they could put in place some kind of model where the best two teams in the ACC play in the championship rather than the winner of the Atlantic and whoever
survived the coastal.
Sure. Right. Yeah. What do you think about this when you hear that might be coming to fruition?
I like that a lot more than we have now. I've always been of the belief that divisions overall is just, I don't think it produces the true product, the true actual champion of both, especially in football, because we've discussed ad nauseum on here how the Atlantic is a beast of a division overall, with Louisville, Clemson, even Wake Forest last year too in Boston College. But then you look at the Coastal, you got Duke, you have Pitt having one, you know, good year for the first time in a little bit, Virginia too as well, and then Miami, you know, how will have one really good year, but then they've only made the conference championship only once. So overall, like, to me, it rewards the team, the best teams possible, and it probably also would have changed the outcome of a lot of maybe some CFP hopes for some of our teams here.
Yeah, I think it would have too. If you look back to us in 2014, not to kick us while we're down, but we beat Clemson on the famed Sean McGuire, oh my gosh, we got the ball back moment. And if you look at the advanced box score for that game, Clemson had an 86% predicted win expectancy percentage. So that means we play that game 100 times, same stat line. They beat us 86 of those 100 times. And you think, like, if we had to play that team the way we were playing in the conference championship again, I don't know if it goes in our favor. And we're not the SEC, so if we'd lost the conference championship that year, we don't go. And if they're not going to send Florida State, they're not going to send the team that lost to Florida State. So the ACC might get left out that year.
Oh, I know you were done with that. Sorry. That was a year that overall, it's just like, it's, I mean, I'm not the big fan of using post-win expectancy, but you're right with that, because that was a very difficult year for us and overall. And yeah, we're not given the preferential treatment that the SEC is given, because ACC conference overall under Swofford before, you know, the new commissioner and John Phillips kind of treated football as like a secondary sort of sport in favor, more in favor of basketball and also their, you know, premier for their academics. So overall, to me, it's like, it would have sucked, and probably we would not see Clemson be the same way that it is now without those CFP appearances, honestly.
Yeah, and you wonder if we get another crack at them, right, in 15, 16. I don't know. Again, post-game win expectancy, we weren't expected to win any of those games. I think Clemson, even in 14, where that chop, or fifth, or was it 16 with the
16.
With the phantom chop below the waist block. Yeah, you still had like a I think they still had a 78% post-game win expectancy on that. Like, that game, we stayed in it with some big-time explosive plays, but I don't know if you play again on a neutral field and you're not in Doak. I don't know if you win that one, but look, never say never, and they weren't that much better than us that year. And again, we win that, we stay out of it. And that begs the question for me. If you look at the Big 12 supporting this, and you think about us, I don't know what the ACC intends to do on this. I got to call some people, but are we being, by we, I mean they in the Big 12, a penny wise and a pound foolish here? What I mean is they are trying to pump up their conference title game, and they're gambling on, hey, if it's two of our two best teams, it'll be a ranked matchup. So the winner will have a better chance to get in, you know, in a year where maybe we're the one getting left out. Shoe on the other foot, you're also not the SEC, and you're creating a much more likely scenario where none of your teams get in because your second best beats your first best.
That's also, though, that isn't it the schools, and with the help of the front office, they make the schedules for that year. So I wouldn't be, I mean, we always discussed, you know, overall how like some schedules, you know, favor, you know, certain teams and certain schools actually in the conference overall, like for brand purposes, for TV, for ratings and all that, and also for the easiest path to the playoff. So I wouldn't be surprised if they still, you know, hey, like, we want to have our harder games at the front end like this way. And then so towards the end, like maybe if you lose a conference championship, right, and you have one loss and that's your only loss, I think you still will be given deference in the Power Five, because we haven't seen what only two Pac-12 teams make it. The only Big 12 team overall has been Texas. And then the Big 10, aside from Michigan and Ohio State, who else has made it? And Michigan was the first time was this past year. So to me, I get the concern. I think that the powers that be at CFP, especially with Clemson, you know, and hopefully us eventually, because overall, like the UM and FSU overall, like those are two brands that nationally do produce ratings. So I think that's something that overall, like, we'll be fine with that.
Yeah. I don't know. I think in some of these leagues, really, in my mind, the Big Ten probably has the most to lose here, because it's a sustainable path to the championship or the playoff, at least in the Big Ten, to be the second best team in the Big Ten and get left out of the conference championship. We've seen that happen, right? Well, we've seen it happen in the SEC too, right? Alabama got kept out by Auburn when they were 9-3, and then they got mollywhopped by Georgia. So Alabama got in. And you wonder, like, if Alabama and Georgia play that year, and Georgia wins that first one, Alabama doesn't go to the playoff. Was Georgia, they were undefeated, right? So maybe they still go. So in a way, yeah, you give yourself a better chance for two to make it, but you also, you do create a better chance of cannibalism. I see what you're saying, but there are five Power Five conferences, and this year you had a Group of Five team get in. 2 years ago, you had an independent get in. 4 years ago, independent gets in. So right now, and you have multiple SEC teams. So like, we're at a clip right now where two conferences are sending teams.
But you're also forgetting that in the next 3 years, we're going to have an expanded playoff. And that's, I think, where this is all eventually going. I think we're still going to get that, because eventually we saw Cincinnati go in there. I mean, they obviously didn't have the best of showing, but also they got mollywopped by Georgia, where everyone basically got mollywopped by Georgia overall. So to me, like, we're going to be making that move. They discussed that already, that they pushed it back, as probably with the COVID situation, they still have all the stuff, you know, together. And also with the big move of Oklahoma and Texas to the SEC. I mean, reportedly they're going to move to 8 or 10 teams by 2025. That's still 3 years from now. And divisionless football, I don't think that's going to be a thing until they actually make that transition.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe we could talk about expansion a bit, but, I don't think it's as sure of a thing as we want it to be. I certainly want it to be. I know you do. The Big 12 is not on board for it, really. I mean, they're a Power Five team, and every Group of Five team or conference, I'm sorry, every Group of Five team with a chance of making the playoff in the foreseeable future is now in the Big 12. So you don't really have that Group of Five threat. And the SEC, you'll see it kind of as a way to make more money, but they're already getting half the teams in the playoff in. As long as they only have, you know, one loss each, they're fine. I think that it will be an arduous process. I mean, dude, the freaking Rose Bowl held up the creation of a playoff for like 3 decades. So if an entire conference decides to stand in the way, it's going to be a bit of a struggle. And, you know, Texas and Oklahoma are going to the SEC, but I don't know if there are any other big players that can make the jump. So I don't know if there's much internal driving or if there's much leverage on the how do I put this? If there's much leverage within the ranks of these conferences to go to their commissioners and say, hey, you need to support expansion, because other conferences are just saying, well, what's the point of expansion? It's just more money for the SEC when they get four teams in.
I mean, that is true, but I just, from what I've been hearing, you're saying the only conference right now that's basically out, like the outside looking in when it comes to expansion, is the Big 12. And that's basically mainly because they got caught with their pants down with Texas and Oklahoma literally leaving in the dead of night. You know, that they got the U up text, you know, at 1 a.m. and they're somehow sneaking after the Uber at 3 o'clock in the morning. Sorry about that. But no, overall, to me, my brain's like mush right now. But overall, to me, it's just that the SEC obviously still wants this. The ACC has alliance now with the Big 10 and also with the Pac 12. And overall, they understand that the revenue with the shared revenue with TV ratings, with the CFP, will be better for them if they have more options in. They've already seen the SEC numerous times have two separate teams in there. The only way they will get more money is that they have more representation actually in the CFP playoff. So to me, as much as the Big 12 wants to say that, you know, we don't want to do this, no offense to them. They're with those two leaving, I know you bring in Memphis, you bring in Cincinnati. That's not part of the Power Five. We're going to go from a Power Five to a Core Four overall. And who gives a fuck what the Big 12 thinks at the end of the day?
Well, I'm going to quote the movie Blow for you when he says, what did I really do but fly some plants across an invisible line? And she says, well, unfortunately, the line you crossed was real and the plants you had with you were illegal. For now, the Big 12 does retain their AQ status. So if we try to move there, we're going to need all four conferences to push them out. And you are talking...
No. I'm not saying we leave to the Big 12.
No. I'm saying to have a core four, you need all four other conferences to decide to not have five AQs. It's not like with the Big East where the conference just stopped existing and it was a no-brainer. And, you know, it was like, all right, we don't need six automatic qualifiers anymore. But, it could go one of a dozen ways. Now, there aren't lines on it yet, but if there are, our title sponsor, betonline.net, will be the first one to have them. Folks, if you're not a gamer, fine. But if you are, there's only one place you should be going, and that's betonline.net. Betonline.net, it's easy. It's got every line you want. It's got odds, props, a casino. You can bet on the Formula One race in Miami. You can bet on the baseball games in Miami. You can bet on the hockey games in Miami. There's a lot going on in Miami sports right now. So if you live in Miami, you need to go to betonline.net. And if you don't live in Miami, you should also go to betonline.net. Betonline.net, where the game starts. I had some straw in my hair. I finally, like, lawn renovation project today. Today was planting the seeds. I was out there with a tiller ripping apart my side yard. I'm exhausted. It's horrible. It was great. It's fun, but exhausting. And then you put the seed down, you put straw on top of it. So I had straw everywhere.
My man's got a three and thumb there, folks.
We'll see if any of this straw actually grows, or any of this, whatever it is, grass actually grows. But, you know, what I did was so my driveway goes, and I've got a front yard on the left and a front yard on the right. So I started just with the front yard on the left. So I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to plant it. We'll give it 6 weeks. That way I can walk outside. I can look right. And then I can see if the grass is really greener on the other side.
Folks, for those of you that are not on YouTube right now, I have just muted Max for that horrible, horribly planned, but very well effective and very well executed dad joke.
That was one of my best ever, and I thought of it on the fly, and I think that I should go into possibly the running for the dad joke Heisman this year, because that was incredible, folks. Well, let's move on. Let's talk about the Florida State schedule. We haven't done the schedule in a few weeks. We like to do this every 3 weeks to a month, where we run through the schedule and say, how are we feeling today? Yesterday, we talked LSU. Today, we'd like to look at the schedule as a whole. So I'm going to pull this thing up. I keep saying I'm going to track it when we make these picks, and I switch computers, and it's, you know, I don't even remember which computer it's on at this point. I'll start tracking my stats log or something. But Drake, how do you can attack this however you want. I'm going to let you kick us off. Schedule breakdown 2022.
Well, we already discussed LSU ad nauseum yesterday, and I'm kind of with you as well. I think you catch a team that's going through a huge coaching change at the beginning of the year. I think you can beat LSU. So to me, let's start off with what do you think are our three most coin toss games over the year? Let's do that.
Okay. I like that. Most coin flippy excluding LSU, I think is this stretch of three right here. And it's Louisville, Boston College, and Wake Forest. The reason I'm picking those three and not other ones is because I think that NC State and Clemson, you're more of an underdog there, unfortunately.
Agreed.
I think that Miami and Florida, I need to see how these new coaches do. I don't think Cristobal is a very good coach. I have a ton of respect for the offensive coordinator they brought in. And all jokes aside, like Tyler Van Dyke is a very good passer. So I need to see more on those teams before I can really, you know. So for me, the coin flip is this stretch. It's 3 weeks in a row. You go to Louisville on a Friday night. One of our commenters mentioned today, and it's a good point. You fortunately are getting them coming off of a Gus Malzahn UCF team. So hopefully, you know, you can catch them. But Malik Cunningham ran for over 1,000 yards last year. He is a dark horse candidate for the Heisman. I don't think Louisville can win enough games to make him a legitimate contender, but he has a really bright future ahead of him. And it's not a guy that you want to play on the road. And then you got Boston College. Same thing. You beat them by one last year. A lot of questionable officiating in that game. However,
it wasn't questionable. It was bad. It was just right, bad.
It was awful. Djurkovic was battling an injury last year. He should theoretically be healthy this year. He was battling an injury when you played him last year. He should theoretically be at full strength when you play him this year. And you're going to have to contend with him. I mean, I think it's a team you can beat, but it's also a team that could shock you if you come in dreary off of an LSU and Louisville stint. And Wake Forest, it's like they beat you, what, 35-14 last year? But I used to do this thing when I used to be a wagerer, a guy that made wagers. I don't do it anymore. But
so a gambler?
Sure. You call it gambling. I call it investing, but whatever. I used to have this pretty effective method for the first 5 or 6 weeks of the year. What I would do is I would look at what was the result from the year before. I would look at a bunch of advanced stats and say, what were the deltas then? What are the deltas so far in this year? And if nothing had substantially changed, I'd say, all right, well, it stands to reason the outcome should be about the same if nothing has substantially changed. However, if you remember last year against Wake Forest, we were missing Robert Scott. We also know that Dillon Gibbons was not like fully in his rhythm yet. You know, he had to get back in shape, had to do a few things. So you had a banged up offensive line. You now get a better center, hopefully. We're hoping that
Caden Lyles.
Getting Caden Lyles, that's right. We're hoping that it's Robert Scott, not Brady. Dude, the two names thing. Robert Scott, we're hoping that he's going to be an effective tackle for you. We're hoping that this Wisconsin transfer is a better tackle for you. So if your offensive line's healthy against that team from last year and Jordan Travis plays the whole game and he's able to stay healthy, I don't think it's going to be the same result as last year, but I'm not going to say, oh yeah, you lost by 21 last year. You'll definitely win this year. Like a big improvement would be a 3-point loss. So I think those three games are coin flips for me. How about yourself?
Yeah. For me, the big two of them, we get the same. I think Louisville overall is probably your number one biggest coin flip game. I also think it's the most important game probably on your schedule to see how the rest of the season plays out. Cause you could easily be 2-1 or 1-2 after that game. And also, like you were saying before, I think Malik Cunningham is the best QB in this entire conference. Hands down, it's not even close. Like to me, it's him, Brandon Armstrong, and Tyler Van Dyke. With Malik, though, they're playing, as the commenter said, UCF before. UCF, as I said before, has brought back John Rice Plumlee III, who was the QB at Ole Miss, who ran for what? Like, I think almost 200 yards against LSU. That's going to make them exhausted heading off like a Friday to Friday game. So to me, that's something that's going to be interesting to watch. And then with Boston College, I like Phil Dracovic a lot. And not only does Phil Dracovic come back healthy, because remember his injury was to his throwing wrist, and he came back the same.
His thumb.
No, it was his wrist. He came back. He had wrist surgery a month and a half before it came back, and he still played through that. And he still played pretty well. But they also come back with Zay Flowers, who was their number one wide receiver. And folks, I think he had two highlight TDs against us. It was like, oh, that was great coverage, but that's what happens when an NFL prospect is actually playing against a bunch of college kids. So to me, that's number two. And then my last one's Miami. And that's mainly because I know it's an away game. And I know we make a lot of jokes about how the Airbnb is always empty. They're leasing it up real quick, but they do show up and show out for their games.
They built a fake yacht park for, they built a fake yacht club for the Formula One race.
I mean, hey, well, it's pretty dope, actually. I would driven by it. No, but overall, I'm sorry, I don't watch F1. I'm not that snooty. Come on, man. But actually, my cousin loves, my cousins love F1. They've been watching it for years. But with Van Dijk, to me, he's that good of a QB. It's just the question marks, like Max is saying, and also Dave said a few weeks ago, is who replaces Charleston Rambo? Is it Xavier Restrepo? Is it Michael Redding? Is it Frank Lassen, the Clemson player? So they have equally as much question marks at wide receiver as we do. And also, they beat us pretty badly. If we won't a tail two halves, we own them in the first half, and Tyler Van Dyke somehow showed up and showed out the second half. I don't know whether it was really it was really reminiscent of the UNC game and under Mike Norvell's first year. So like basically we were holding on a dear life to not lose. So to me, overall, with Josh Gass, who I'm a huge fan of, Kevin Steele to me is a little overrated as a new DC, but I think Cristobal actually is a pretty damn good head coach if he's not playing Utah. So overall, we'll see exactly how he does. But to me, that's coin flip game number three.
I think that's all logically sound. Like I said, I for me, Miami is probably your biggest wait and see. I will give a hot take, though, because why not? I don't think that game is going to be close in one direction or the other. I think that both of these teams have a lot of question marks. And one, like, there are so many unknowns on the table. There's no way that they all work out favorably for the two teams. So to me, it's like, I feel like this will end up in a situation where one of these teams is going to have a breakout year and one is going to kind of have a failure to launch type situation. And it'll be interesting to see where they are because they don't play until November 5th. Drake, let me ask you this. What are your three main guaranteed, like who are your locks? If you had to bet right now and I gave you even odds on Florida State's money line, you'd put your whole student loan balance on those three games.
Duquesne, Syracuse. No,
Duquesne doesn't count.
Duquesne doesn't count?
No, give me like, because I'm going to force you to kind of do two obvious ones and then make you like kind of reach on one.
All right. Syracuse, Louisiana, Raging Cajuns, and Georgia Tech.
That's fair. Yeah. I forgot about Louisiana. I was hoping to make you take a spicy take on that one.
I can give you one if you want.
No. It's okay. I'll give you my three. But first, folks, we got some local ads for you. Unless you're on YouTube, which is why you should be on YouTube. What am I enjoying on this fine night? Well, I'm glad you asked, Drake. This is a drink that I invented, and I call it the Diaspora. If you're not familiar with what the Diaspora is, it's the spreading of those with Irish heritage to the, you know, North American region, most specifically America, primarily into the Northeast. But whatever, that's what it means. It's a weird word. It's talking about Irish immigration to America. So this is a take on the American drink, the Boilermaker, which is a beer and a whiskey together, where I have an American beer and an Irish whiskey. And I drink them with one big rock, very slowly. If y'all have been watching this, you realize that I'm not much of a drinker. I'm more of like a one beer at night kind of guy, and I drink it very, very slowly, and half the nights I don't even finish it. So don't try this drink if you're one of those that finishes your whiskey in 5 seconds. Like, that's not going to be a fun night. This is like a make one, let it simmer for like 2 hours, you know, and just work your way through it and let the taste complement each other. Anyway, Driz, my three must wins are, or I would put the whole farm on, are the same as yours. But I will go one further. And that if
Florida,
no, I was going to say, I know we talked about it yesterday, but if it was not the, I'm not saying we will for sure win, but if it was you had to bet it today, I would bet the LSU game, especially a 3.5 point spread, but I would take us money line on that. And I feel, you know, sometimes you just get a feeling, and it's like, I felt this way about Notre Dame last year. I felt this way about the Michigan game. You know, sometimes you're just like, I feel like we're outmatched, but I feel like people will think we're more outmatched than we really are.
See, that's why I wait till Notre Dame. I took Notre Dame plus 4.5. Sorry, I took us plus 4.5 against Notre Dame. Which, yeah,
I got a sweet line on that game.
Yeah. To me, I will not touch LSU until it's like 4.5 points, primarily because, as you discussed yesterday, QBs, Miles Brennan, is he healthy? Garrett Nussmeier, well, you can see what he is. Jane Daniels from 2 years ago, amazing. Jane Daniels from last year, not very good. So, I mean, I kind of get you with that. That's a must win. Like, if you put money down right now with your gut, I love gut, you know, playing with my gut with that. But to me, if I, again, with this, it's Florida, primarily because we have no idea who the QB is. Emory Jones transferred out. Jack Miller, who's a transfer from Ohio State.
AR-15s look pretty awful in the Twitter videos I've seen.
Yeah, but I don't care about Twitter. But you're right. Like, apparently, all reports from practice says that his accuracy isn't all that great, which is kind of surprising given his track record in high school. Like, to me, that kid has a Cam Newton kind of ceiling. He's big, has a great arm, and can move. So to me, them having like QB issues, maybe us saying that he's basically a Sun Belt version of Mike Norvell could be true.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I could get behind that. I don't think it's, I wouldn't bet on us to win it right now. I'm pulling up Anthony Richardson's stats because I want to make sure I'm right about this before I say it. Yeah, I was going to say, I thought he's had some accuracy issues. So last year he only threw the ball 64 times, but he had like a 59% completion rating. He also threw 6 TDs to 5 picks.
He did have a lot of drops, though. I will say that.
Yeah, but those should always even out over time, right? Like, I don't. Maybe. I don't know. But do 6 to 5 is like.
That's more concerning.
Two of them were against Georgia. So even if we take those away and say, all right, those don't count, it's like you're still 4. What were you, still 6 and 4, which is not a good ratio. And also,
some of those picks are like, if you watch them, they're classic, you know, freshman mistakes, where as he's a sophomore and they're huge overthrows, like, my guy, you do know that your team is wearing blue and orange. They're not wearing garnet and gold, or they're not wearing white. Like, some of the picks are just really bad, and it's just kind of surprising that he has that problem.
Yeah, also, I can only say this about a Florida player, but the hit that took him out of the game against us was super soft. Like, I don't know exactly what was wrong with him, but, like, I looked at it, and I was like, that guy doesn't look that hurt. Like, it looks like he kind of just, I mean, kind of the whole Florida team last year, which is embarrassing we lost to him, but, like, it kind of looked like he, you know, just, like, didn't want to be there. Like, he came out, he ran one kind of into a pile up the middle, took a shoulder pad to the leg, and was like,
he did have growing issues throughout the entire year, so that could be a little tweak.
No, I don't know. It's interesting when you get into the meat of the schedule, right? And you look at Miami, and then you get 2 sure wins, and then you get Florida. And it's like, could you catch Florida at a better time, though? Like, really? I mean, they've got a new coach, and they'll get to the end of the year. And you've got a team, right, who has proven their will to quit. And you've got another team in Florida State that, say what you want about this team last year, but they never quit. I mean, even against Florida, scrub the bad memories. We were on the 2-yard line late in the game. We got a stupid pass interference in the end zone. Still don't agree with it. Backs us up to the 17. Like, we still kept pushing and trying to win that game, even after all the mistakes. Like, whatever. And then you got a Florida team who just, besides the game against us, just sort of gave up. And their schedule going into this game, keep in mind, we play Miami, but then we get to go play
Syracuse and Louisiana.
Syracuse and Louisiana Lafayette. They have to play at Texas A&M. Then they get to come home, but they have to play South Carolina, who, remember, South Carolina now has Spencer Rattler and Shane Beamer as their head coach. So they're looking to make a massive improvement this year.
They're going to be really good.
And then they got to go play at Vanderbilt, which Vanderbilt's Vanderbilt. I get it. But that's a much tougher game. Relative, we're not talking overall toughness, but relative toughness to Louisiana Lafayette without Billy Napier, that's a much harder game than we have to play. So the schedule's in our favor. And yeah, I don't know.
They play Georgia the week before Texas A&M, which also sucks.
That's a meat grinder for them.
Like, their schedule.
And it's,
like,
at home in Doak.
Yeah, and it's at home in Doak. I mean, they start the season off against Utah. They have Cameron Rising, one of the best QBs in the Pac-12. They're going to stomp them. Kentucky, Will Levis, another good QB, going to stomp them. They probably beat up USF. Tennessee with Hendon Hooker, that's a pretty damn good team. So they might start off 2-2, maybe even 1-3. Probably beat up Eastern Washington, probably beat up Missouri. So they're 3-3. LSU, I mean, I think we're better than Florida. So I think that basically that UF is going to lose that game. And then they probably lose Georgia, then Texas A&M, and then South Carolina. So quite honestly, you might be seeing a 5-6 team at Florida who might be competing for bowl eligibility, because that schedule is not doing them any favors at all whatsoever.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's not a good schedule. It's good to get to play them at the end. And again, it's a team that shows that they are willing to quit. So overall, I know we did a little bit less of like game to game schedule breakdown, but y'all know it's seven to nine wins is kind of where we're sitting. I mean, for me, at least it's 7 to 9 wins. And I always had the caveat. I think 6 is more likely than 10. So I like to talk on the edges there.
Yeah. I mean, to me, like I've always said, like this team can win 8, should win 7, probably will win 6. That's kind of how I've just been the entire time. Because until they show me that they're able to win the games or steal one that they can, I'm just going to bank with the, you know, 6 wins. And basically we should be expecting a bowl this season anyways.
Yeah. If they don't make a bowl game, that's, I'll tell you what, that's when your boy is going to be switching out his Garnet for some blue and be like, all right, go Panthers, Georgia State. Let's do that. You know, gosh, we miss a bowl game again. That's going to be depressing. But if we're able to pull some of these out and we're able to win 7-8 games, well, that won't be depressing. Either way, Locked On Seminoles will be here for each and every one of you every single day. Guys, thanks for stopping by. Thanks for subscribing. And from me to you, from Drake to you, from Dave to you, from Holly, from Stacy to you, we hope you have a wonderful day. I'm Max. That was Drake. And this was Locked On Seminoles.
Take care, buddy. And may the 4th be with you.
Jesus Christ.